The CineSnob Podcast is brought to you by Alamo Drafthouse. Hey, guys.
Hi, better. Jared.
It's been a while, by the way.
Yeah.
Better Off Dead quote along coming up. You've seen Better Off Dead, of course, right?
I have not.
You have not seen Better Off Dead?
I have not, but I saw the preview for it the other day, and it looked like it might be up my alley.
How about you, Kiko?
Kiko Cody? Yeah, I've seen it. It's been a while, but...
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
You know what? I want to know, Cody, this is from director Savage Steve Holland, is his name. He also created a show, maybe you remember, Eek the Cat. Do you remember Eek the Cat?
I can't say that I do.
Do you remember Eek the Cat, Kiko?
Yeah, I do. I remember Eek
Kumbaya.
The Cat.
Kumbaya! Yeah, it was a Fox cartoon. I thought that
he
was
had like a He had a lisp, didn't he?
Yeah. I don't remember much else about it. He was like a purple cat who was always running afoul of something. He didn't have an attitude like Garfield or Heathcliff. He was more docile. And anyway, a Better Off Dead quote along. It's the 30th anniversary of Better Off Dead, which was released August 23rd, 1985. Wow. So in honor of that, Alamo Drafthouse Park North here in San Antonio is having a screening on the exact date of the anniversary.
That's actually kind of cool.
Yeah. Sunday, August 23rd, 2015. That's weird. People always talk about how the summer of 84 was full of classic stuff, but the summer of 85 was pretty chock full too, because we just had the Pee-wee's Big Adventure 30th anniversary. By the way, great job. Ah! Great job on all that stuff, Kiko, with the San Antonio Currents.
Thanks. Yeah.
Not you're gonna rescind all that praise with that impression. What's the biggest revelation from your piece?
That I actually found Francis.
Oh, I thought it was the two basements of the Alamo.
Oh, I knew though about one of them. I didn't know that they had two.
That blows my mind.
But they wouldn't let me go in the second one, so I'm a little, you know, I'm wondering what's down there really.
Pee-wee's bike.
Maybe.
Anyway, Better Off Dead quote along, Alamo Draft House, Park North, Sunday, August 23rd at 7:30 p.m. All right, let's start the show.
In a world filled with movie podcasts, three critics from the juggernaut media market of San Antonio decided to change the entire course of the internet. A feat attempted by many and conquered by many. To produce a relatively listenable podcast, devastating truth bombs.
Brace yourselves, guys. The Muppets are puppets. You know that, right?
No! Wait! Oh, please, no!
They're puppets.
Don't ruin it!
And
Muppets are puppets.
This is kind of
hard facts.
Yeah, not Kevin Feige or Feig, whatever.
Feig.
I think it's Feige.
Is it really?
I have no idea.
Asking the important questions.
What is that? What was that I just saw right now? It was like a fat Iron Man.
That's a Hulkbuster.
Hulkbuster armor.
That's
how he fights the
Iron Man.
This is the CineSnob Podcast.
It's been a really long time, you guys.
We're mildly in person again.
I'm actually at Cody's house right now.
Yeah.
Well, you were. We skipped last week.
Well, sort of.
Sort of.
You and I did not skip last week, but Hollywood Martinez over there decided he was too good for us again.
Yeah. What happened, Dico? Were you drinking too late into the night with all the celebs you were partying with? And
Probably not. I was probably feeding a child or doing something like that.
Watching some more Disney stuff on YouTube with your kids.
Well, right now it's My Little Pony, so I've become a brony somehow.
Are you going to be a brony?
I think I've done it like unintentionally.
Wow. That's I don't know that you can do that unintentionally, but that's
you definitely can.
Cody's telling me to get closer to the mic.
Yeah.
You could have just said that.
Well, I don't want to.
It's been a while since I've been on this mic, so I don't.
Well, you can. Oh, well, it's already pushed forward as much as possible. Scoot in. Make yourself at home.
I'm going to scoot up. We're all drinking beer tonight.
Yeah.
That's another piece of news. Hey, by the way, this is episode 58 of the CineSnob Podcast. I'm Jared Kingery.
I'm Cody Villafana.
And I'm Kiko Martinez.
Back from assignment, Kiko was off the week before last, finishing your big Pee-wee epic that was in the San Antonio Current.
I thought he went moved to Spain to farm rice.
Oh, did you listen to the show, Kiko?
What show?
The one that you missed. Remember, you were too busy, not this past week where you just
Of course I did, guys.
We were speculating about where you were, and we came up with a pretty good story.
Oh, what was that? That I was in Spain farming rice?
Yeah, because you were going to come out with your own boxed rice.
Tio Kiko's.
You were going to try to throw off Uncle Ben.
Yeah. It was a good story. It was a lot of – we managed to get through the whole thing. It was like 10 minutes of just riffing without breaking.
Yeah.
I'm sure it totally turned off any listeners.
Oh, you know what? I had a friend who messaged me, my friend Blake. And he was like, what the hell? What is up with the first 11 minutes of your podcast? And I was like, I don't even remember. And now that's what it was. It was the Kiko story.
People will ask me about the show, and I remember nothing.
Oh, yeah. I'm the same way.
I'm like, what? They'll, like, repeat jokes back to me or something. And I'm like,
really?
I don't even...
People pay that much attention?
Oh, there's a web show that some friends of mine and I did. It was called Perspectives, the Emmy-nominated puppet show.
Oh.
Do you have those puppets, by the way?
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, who has them? You have them or somebody else? Or
no, I have them. I built them.
Why? How many are there? Like, how many do you have?
There are two complete – well, there are three complete ones. Well, here's the story. One of the main characters, Lon Delacroix from the show, I cut his head off
to make
Conan. The Conan puppet. But then I rebuilt his body. I rebuilt him a separate body later because he was starring in some – 48-hour film projects. So yeah, I have So I have the puppet still. Why do you want to meet him someday?
Yeah, maybe. Do you have any darker skin puppets, like Hispanic ones or anything?
No. Do you want me to make one? Is this some sort of like affirmative action puppet thing?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you want me to make a Kiko puppet? Is that what you want to do?
That's kind of what I'm going for.
I've got an Andy Richter puppet that I made for the Conan Occupy Conan episode. He's got the round face like you do. I could just repaint it. I could just paint black hair onto him. And
what were you saying, though? You said that someone with Perspectives talking about the show.
Oh, someone will repeat back jokes to me. And, like, I wrote all that stuff.
Yeah.
Me and two other guys wrote all that stuff. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? I don't remember that stuff at all.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's the life of making stuff every day. Or like a lot, like dumping a lot of words into the world, and you're like, I don't remember saying that.
It is really cool. I don't know if you've experienced it, Kiko, but someone who actually listens to the show, like telling me that something that one of us said made them laugh really hard, or I had someone once tell me over they almost crashed their car at something that we said, which is pretty cool.
Do we have to put a some kind of warning on the show?
We're
or
not responsible if you crash your car.
Not responsible if you crash your car.
Yeah, if you listen to us and you laugh.
Which, by the way, don't expect that.
Yeah.
Because 9 times out of 10, our jokes are just going to
really
bomb.
Yeah, you're setting us up for failure there. Yeah,
really building this up, and it's never going to pay off.
Yeah, whoever said that has a terrible sense of humor.
Maybe they laughed at like one of the technical errors when I left in a countdown or something.
Yeah.
Editing.
Or like when you – yeah, yeah, when you
– when I blow a take and then
– they forget to edit it out because you're lazy.
Yeah, and then I hear it later. I'm like, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Not that big of a deal.
No one cares.
Okay. Yeah, this is interesting. We're like 2/3 in the same room again, and it's been a while since you've moved to the ATX.
Sat on my lap. Oh, what?
Well, that too.
Yeah, the ATX is it's a cruel mistress, but
it's really weird. Jared came in wearing like skin tight pants, and he has like a twirly mustache, and it's
and
a
now he's wearing a manicured mustache, you guys. And I was like, Cody, you have any PBR in here?
You know what? I actually didn't know that was a hipster beer until I went to San Francisco, and it was everywhere.
Oh, really?
I didn't know it was hipster.
I think it's past hipster now.
Oh, really?
I mean, I don't know. I went to a club downtown Austin a few weeks ago, and I didn't see anybody drinking PBR, but there were plenty of well manicured mustaches.
I bet.
So.
Did you go for a ride?
I took a Lyft. Wink.
Oh, timely.
Wink, wink. That's coming back to San Antonio, isn't it?
Yeah.
Look at you guys.
Not Uber, but.
Look at you guys growing back up.
Hey, we got fiber, too.
Oh, yeah.
Hey,
Google
Fiber. For somebody that has moved to Austin, you sure do come back a lot, so I don't.
Yeah, you're here
Dude,
every
I
weekend.
Know I'm here every weekend. Once I get stuff out of my house, that's really what. And August is like when everybody's birthday is in my family. Like all of my like my nephew's birthday is next week. My brother's birthday was today. My mom's birthday is next week. Yeah, summer's like when everybody has a birthday, and that's why I have to be down here. But September, baby, you won't see me.
I don't know. Maybe yeah, but then November. But then November, December, you're going to use the holidays as an excuse, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's really like it's an hour and a half drive, so it's not like it's, you know, awful.
Yeah, it's not bad.
I mean, it sucks having to do it twice in a weekend, like I did this weekend. But, you know, life goes on.
The beat goes on.
Yeah, this is getting a little weird.
It always has been.
Yeah. So, anyway, let's go ahead and move on to news.
It's time for the real rundown, recapping this week in movie news.
First up, my man crush, my earliest Hollywood man crush, Ben Affleck. Is rumored to have totally blown away the Warner Brothers executives that screened a, I guess you would call it a rough cut of Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. Mm-hmm. Allegedly, the screening received a standing ovation.
From the Warner Brothers brass, that's what we're hearing.
Yeah, which is kind of a weird thing to
say. I don't know that I buy that, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think standing ovation is a term that's kind of overused. Like, it just means like they really were... like
jazzed.
Like, I think it just means dollar signs appeared in their eyes.
Yeah, that could be it.
And now the rumor is that Affleck is going to be basically front and center as Batman in three standalone movies.
Writing, directing, and starring.
Yeah, as opposed to the one that he was guaranteed.
Yeah.
Or contractually obligated to.
Yeah, the idea behind it is that DC and I guess Warner Brothers, as it were, I don't know why I said that. I just wanted to say it. DC and Warner Brothers are going to center this DC cinematic universe around what they hope a Batman trilogy, and they want Affleck. I guess they really liked Affleck's performance in the film, and they were really impressed with that. And now they want to go back and do a trilogy with him in it. Jared.
Sorry. My Power Rangers text message. Oh, there's a phone ringing now here too. What's happening in this place?
Hold on.
Cody's got to answer the phone.
Gee whiz.
We're in the kitchen of my house.
Let's just keep going. This is great.
But yeah, so the idea is that the two Ben Affleck movies were pushed back. Live by Night and The Accountant were both pushed back recently.
That would be his projects that, like, I guess the kind of prestige projects he's been known for.
Yeah, and I guess what this Slash Film article is saying is that The Accountant has already been shot and Live by Night is still shooting in November. So that those sides of things will not be adjusted. But, the idea is that they want Affleck to write, direct, and star in a Batman trilogy and sort of center everything around that.
What do you think, Kiko?
You know me, I'd rather him do his other projects than focus on superhero movies. But I mean, if they're as good as Christopher Nolan's first and second ones, I mean, I'd like to get that more than another Fantastic Four from.
Well, you know, I think the question becomes if Affleck has creative control. Who is to say that his Batman movies can't be on par with or stylistically or as gritty, but maybe not with language or violence, as the movies that he's writing and directing on his own? I guess is the question.
Yeah, I mean, if he's a prestige director, as it were.
Thank you.
Yeah, I keep saying this. If he's a prestige director, there's no reason he's not going to bring that prestige to this Batman project. I mean, we've seen it already. With Christopher Nolan taking it to the right level, I think, of serious drama film paired with superhero film.
And I think also, to a degree, Affleck is more interested in being – and this is just speculation. I don't know the guy, but
– You don't?
No. It's contrary. You know, a lot of people think
everybody
I do.
Everybody isn't telling me how much you know.
I know.
How you know Ben Affleck.
Yeah, but me and Big Ben, no. So basically what I'm trying to say is I think that he enjoys being a filmmaker after finding success. I mean, it saved his career.
Yeah.
And I don't think that he would take this project on unless he had a good artistic reason to do that. I don't think he's at a point in his career where dollar signs are just, you know, flashing in his eyes. I think that, you know, especially after you see him as a filmmaker, especially even more after, you know, the first film he made didn't even have him in it as an actor. So I do kind of wonder if, you know, by him agreeing to do this, he sees something artistically, you know, I guess there, it has artistic merit to it, or he has control to do what he wants with it. And maybe he has a idea that he can work into a Batman movie. I don't know. Nobody says it has to be based on anything, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure some people say that, but nobody with power. How pissed do you think his old pal Kevin Smith is that he's getting – that Ben Affleck's been handed the reins of something like Batman before
As long as Ben Affleck is in Mallrats, I think that Kevin Smith is just fine.
Do you think he's going to be in Mallrats?
Yeah, maybe just for a quick scene.
Yeah, in prison.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think? Is he going to be in Mallrats, Kiko?
You know what? I don't know. I think that a lot of this – if he does hook up with DC – it's going to take a lot of his time, you know?
So he won't get to do the 15-second cameo in a Kevin Smith movie, you're saying?
Probably not. Was he in Clerks 2? He was, right?
Like yes.
For a quick cameo.
Yeah. I don't even – does he even have a line? Oh, he says that's real sanitary, I think, and that's like his only line.
He has like a crazy handlebar mustache.
Yeah.
How the fuck – how do you remember that?
I've seen Clerks 2 a lot.
I really like Clerks 2.
I do too.
You guys are crazy.
What? Did we like that movie?
Yeah, I hated that movie. Oh. But I hated the original too, so.
Oh, 20 years ago you hated it or you hate it now?
20 years ago.
Really? You had no fun as a teenager.
I don't think the first Clerks holds up very well.
No, I think we may have talked about this before, but I still think it's not the best movie of his, but I still think Mallrats holds up the best. Like it ages the best.
There's some parts of Mallrats I don't like, and we've talked about this on end. But I think that for me, Chasing Amy and Clerks 2 hold up the best.
Chasing Amy is so earnestly 90s, though.
It is, but
I still love it.
There's still a lot of qualities to it. You know what sucks though is Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
It's not a good movie. And Dogma
doesn't hold up either.
Dogma, I'm like, why is Chris Rock in this? Why?
Yeah.
Why is this character even in this? Why weren't all these lines given to Alan Rickman?
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and move on to the next topic. Josh Trank,
ooh,
director of Fantastic Four, which we'll be talking about in a few minutes, famously was fired, if you believe the rumors, from the one of the Star Wars anthology movies coming up. The one about Boba Fett, right? That's the one?
Yes.
A lot of stories about strife with the producer Simon Kinberg, who's also producing this Star Wars film.
Yeah, lots of rumors about on-set troubles, him really getting...
basically being kind of an ass.
Yeah, just being a petulant child.
Yeah. So of course, Fantastic Four was released this week, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, how bad it was.
Well, I mean, I think before we give our opinions, we should say it's – because I think it's important to the story. The movie is in single digits in the Rotten Tomatoes scores.
Right.
8% currently. It fell from 9 down to 8.
He tweeted out
– I've got the tweet.
Go ahead and read what he tweeted out. And it was deleted after.
Yeah, it was deleted almost immediately. A year ago, I had a fantastic version of this, and it would have received great reviews. You'll probably never see it. That's the reality, though.
Ooh, sick.
I like the fact that he did that, but who are you kidding? Give me a break.
Do you like the fact that he put fantastic in it?
Stupid. It's almost as stupid as the last line of the movie.
do you really think, though, that because he has a screenwriter credit on this film.
Yeah.
What do you think – like you saw the movie, right, Kiko?
I didn't actually.
Okay. Well, Cody, what do you think when you see the movie, this thing feels like a misfire from the get-go, right?
No.
Not to you?
No, not to me. But I tell you what sort of jives with this idea is if you believe the rumors – and rumors have been happening for a long time on this movie. I mean this – we were talking about how this rumored to be in trouble – like a year ago.
Yeah.
But apparently what had happened was the movie went into pretty extensive reshoots, and apparently Trank was not there for the reshoots. It was taken over by Kinberg, and Kinberg oversaw the reshoots.
Right.
And to me, the second half, or not even second half, but the last 15 minutes of Fantastic Four feels like a giant reshoot.
Yeah, but I mean, we'll talk about it too, but the setup for this movie, like there's a – this movie – and we'll, like I said, we'll review it in earnest later. But
yeah,
it feels like it's one big setup.
Yeah, it does.
And with no payoff. And I don't. I mean, I just. It feels like that everybody involved with this thing made a huge mistake. You know, because this didn't spring, you know, just from Josh Trank's brain.
Right.
This is a huge property that. At one point, Fox was hoping to integrate with the X-Men series.
Yeah.
And whatever decisions they made along the way were not good, and it wasn't helped by the fact that this guy is kind of a nut job, so to speak. I mean, if you believe the rumors, I mean, they seem pretty credible.
They do, and look, I mean, the fact of the matter is you don't willingly give up a Star Wars job.
Yeah.
I mean, I just – whatever damage control they went into, and they obviously went into damage control to, A, try to, you know, save Fantastic Four and any life it had, yeah. But obviously to try to do the right thing by Trank and not embarrass him publicly.
Well, I sent you the link to that Entertainment Weekly article that's kind of a lot of – like speculation as to what
that article was just a mess. Update, well, update with totally conflicting ideas. Yeah.
Well, it was the idea was, like you said, that Fox was trying to let him save face.
Yeah.
And then he slashed out at the end.
So here's the common thread, and we may have talked about this, but Simon Kinberg is a producer on Star Wars too.
Right.
And the idea behind it was that Kinberg saw what was happening on the Fantastic Four set and was like, hell no, this guy is not ready to take on a Star Wars or in any shape to take on a Star Wars movie. And, you know, it's speculation at this point, all of it is, but, I mean, you know, if you read any article, it's like sources on the film say that he did this. Like he berated set people on the set, crew members. He trashed that house.
His dogs
trashed the house. Yeah. I mean, look, any saving face they do all smells like bullshit. And I think everyone is sort of picking up on the idea that, yeah, I mean, this guy's like you said, a nut job. And, the idea that he tweeted this out sort of, you know, you and I, and I think Kiko too, we all get sort of pissed off when people don't take ownership of their bad movies.
Yeah.
And they don't just admit, hey, look, this thing's a turd. And, you know, we saw it, you know, with Johnny Depp and Armie Hammer and Gore Verbinski with The Lone Ranger blaming critics for.
And even Miles Teller earlier this week?
Yeah, it was earlier this week.
Saying, what did he say that?
He said something like, it's not going to have a 90% score on Rotten Tomatoes. yeah, you're damn right it doesn't, Miles.
It sucks.
Yeah. So, you know, it's it's typical saving face stuff. I don't buy that. Well, I mean, maybe I do buy it because we'll talk about it in a minute, but I actually saw some glimmers of what Trank was trying to do when I watched Fantastic Four. You know, it's one of those situations where you've got a guy who wants a career after this, and to be given a property like this and just tank with it, especially after going over budget and your name is being dragged through the mud online, it makes sense that Trank would try to distance himself from it. I mean, yeah.
Do you think this matters to the general public? Do you think if like you heard that this movie was going to be bad, because there are troubled films that turned out great.
Yeah.
Like I think the most recent one I can think of off the top of my head is The Bourne Identity.
Yeah.
I think if it's at this level of badness, then it hurts for a mainstream audience because they get it into their heads that, well, maybe it is that bad. You know, everybody's saying that it's bad, you know, if it has, you know, if it's that hated, I mean, if it's kind of a mixed bag, I think people are still going to go out and see it. But if it's at this level of, you know, people are saying that it's, you know, terrible, then I think that hurts its chances of making any cash.
It's funny how much they like pulled back on this movie and then seemingly at the last minute ramped it up. Because I would have thought we would have seen little publicity from the main actors.
And I didn't see what happened, but apparently the publicity tour for this thing was a train wreck.
Well, there was another awkward interview where there's an interview, I can't remember who it was with, but where someone's questioning Michael B. Jordan and Kate Mara about how they could be brother and sister.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's just like tone deaf, junket crap.
Yeah.
But then, you know, Miles Teller coming out and saying that it was, you know, oh, the critics are going to hate this because this is what they do. You know, they hate movies like this.
Right.
Meanwhile, they don't because...
Well, yeah, because you have, you know, comic book movies in the past 2 years have been really well received. There haven't been many that have not been well received, yeah. Really.
But then, like, Trank a few weeks ago said he talked about canceling the 3D conversion.
Yeah.
That's a weird thing for a studio to do. I mean, that was another bullshit.
I mean, it was probably that Fox didn't want to sink any more money into what they knew was a dud.
Yeah, but it's weird because controlling spin on something like this, like, it's a bad movie, but. And it's tanking at the box office, but it could have been like you could fool enough people, you know.
And I wonder how poorly it would have been received without the bad press.
Yeah.
I mean, look, it's a bad. But we'll talk about it in a minute.
Let's go ahead and wrap this up, and let's go ahead and move on to reviews so we can talk about this.
Here are this week's reviews.
First up, Fantastic Four.
This is Ben.
What's up? You was Lucky Charms.
You guys sure you're in the best shape to be doing this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We're good.
So, I guess I should come up with something better than one small step for man.
Strap in and get comfy, kids. We're about to make history.
Yeah, or die. Either or. All right, gentlemen. Hands and feet must remain inside the ride at all times. Don't blow up. Don't blow up.
Oh, yeah, that's what I want to hear before going into another dimension.
5, 4, 3.
Ooh, four young outsiders teleport to an alternate and dangerous universe which alters their physical form in shocking ways. The four must learn to harness their new abilities and work together to save Earth from a former friend turned enemy. You didn't see this, right, Kiko?
No, but I really want to know if this movie was worse than the first two.
Well, have you seen the first two?
I have not.
Yes. The answer is yes. Okay. But I'm going to let Cody start off talking about this movie.
You know, Jared and I were talking about this, maybe not, and, you know, we wanted to save it for the podcast, obviously, but this movie is getting trashed.
The reviews are not fantastic.
Yeah, and people I've seen talk about it and just, you know, as we were talking about it outside of the theater with everyone we saw it with, I mean, it's hated. It's being considered by a lot of people to be the worst comic book movie ever made.
It's got a lower Rotten Tomatoes score than Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
Which is not – the tomato meter thing back then was a little different.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's a pretty universally reviled movie.
Right. The thing is, I did not hate it as much as most people do.
Yeah.
It's a bad movie, and it's an unequivocally bad movie. There's no dancing around that. The thing that was weird for me was that as I was watching it, I was into it at times, and I was like, this isn't that bad. And then as it started to end and wrap up, I was like, wait a minute. Yes, it is. This is terrible. And it was like a latent hit of how bad it was. First off, the biggest complaint I have about it is that the character development is nowhere to be found. There's no arcs. There's no anything.
Yeah.
It's just a mess. I mean, you know, Miles Teller is the closest thing you have to a fleshed out character. But, like, Jamie Bell is in the movie for, like, 10 minutes maybe as himself.
Until he gets called back out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, you have to be part of this plot, so come on in.
Right. Kate Mara doesn't really do much. Michael B. Jordan doesn't do much.
And by the way, Miles Teller and Michael B. Jordan are two of my favorite – like young actors right now.
Yeah.
I love Michael B. Jordan in Friday Night Lights especially. That's where I think everybody first saw him. But
oh, yeah. You know, going a little further, there are parts of the film where I could actually see what Josh Trank was trying to do because it's almost as if he was trying to create a really intimate, character-driven superhero movie. Almost like Kiko's favorite movie, Ang Lee's The Hulk. Or Hulk. Was it The Hulk?
Hulk. Hulk. Just Hulk.
Ang Lee's Hulk.
That's your favorite movie, Kiko?
I love Hulk.
It's almost it's like a really intimate version where, you know, I actually was really intrigued by the fact that nobody had superpowers and nobody was wearing a suit and it was just, you know, scientists doing things.
This had some echoes of Hulk now that you mention it.
Yeah, definitely.
Like Hulk at how Hulk wrapped up. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how Miles Teller spins the start of the third act.
Yeah. And it was almost like an anti-superhero movie at times because it was just they were trying to create something really character driven. The problem is nothing worked. And, you know, of course, there were periods of time. I mean, I think the beginning of the movie, not the very beginning, but as Miles Teller goes to the place and they start building what they're building, I think that's fine. I have no problem with that, really.
You know, the thing about it is, though, that the Fantastic Four and the movies from 10 years ago, what did you think of those, Kiko, by the way? Do you dislike those?
I mean, that was at the start of what? The superhero push.
It's like 2005, 2007. So that was right around Spider-Man 2 times.
Right. So they were kind of hit and miss depending on, you know, who was behind it. So I think those were – I mean, I don't think they were really well done.
I didn't think they were bad movies. I just thought they were not great movies and not really very good movies.
Yeah, I thought they were just pretty average myself. I mean, when compared to like a Spider-Man 2 or something like that. So
the thing about them though is the Fantastic Four – when you look at the powers that they have, that's really corny. Like, especially Reed Richards' character. And nobody's really captured it yet. Yon Gruffudd, who played Reed Richards in the original films from the 2005, was fine. I mean, the Fantastic Four thing needs to have a level of corn in it. That this one totally missed, in my opinion. I mean, turning it into like a serious drama.
Yeah.
I mean, something like Batman can be adapted to that because, you know, this is a crime fighter fighting crime.
Yeah.
This is all of a sudden, you know, these people come back from another dimension and now he can stretch himself.
Yeah, that whole setup was just the worst.
So I mean, there's some interesting stuff when they're figuring out their powers. It's a lot of people describe it as body horror stuff.
Yeah.
Which was fine, and I thought Jamie Bell's thing, not his wiener, I thought the thing was pretty well done in this movie, just not fleshed out enough. I kind of liked the concept that he was instantly militarized.
Yeah,
like he became a tool of the military, just going into kick ass.
Yeah,
there's little interesting things like that, and then when Miles Teller's Reed Richards is on the run. Because he has the power to stretch himself and move his skin. Like, he's able to disguise himself with his power. Like, he can make his face look different, which was a great concept.
Yeah.
It's just that none of it goes anywhere.
Well, and even, like, the Doctor Doom stuff.
I hated that shit.
First of all, I will say that him making people's heads explode was pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
I really like that.
When Doctor Doom shows up and just starts telekinetically blowing people's heads up.
That was pretty awesome.
But he's all powerful. Like, he was a god.
Well, I don't understand, like, what his problem was because they show up to the other dimension and Dr. Doom goes back with them and then he's like, hey, I just want to go back to my home. So, like, why did you go in the first place?
Yeah. I don't know. It's the end of that this movie is awful.
Well, that's the thing. It's that the whole thing is basically a 90-minute setup, and then literally, and I'm not exaggerating, maybe a 15-minute climax, and that's it, and it just ends.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's, yeah, I mean.
It's the quickest foot-on-the-gas climax of a movie I can remember.
But it takes them an hour to get to their powers.
Uh-huh,
and
yeah.
We need to be done with that by 2015.
Yes, if it's not interesting.
I didn't find this as interesting as you did. I didn't find them sitting around the lab.
Well, I will say it wasn't wholly interesting. I think there were moments where it was interesting.
Yeah. It's a tough buy-in from the get-go for me because it starts in 2007 when these people are 10 years old and they're building teleporters.
Yeah.
And then they're having a high school science fair where they're showing off a teleporter that they built. And Dan Castellaneta – I can't fucking say his name. It's the beer.
Castellaneta.
Homer Simpson.
I've had more than you and I can say it.
I'm a lightweight. I'm a toucan Sam over here.
I've never heard that, but that's amazing. That's really funny.
Anyway, you know, he's like, oh, this is all just, you know, magic tricks and stuff. Like, no, he built a teleporter
right.
as an 18-year-old. And then he gets recruited to the Science Institute or wherever he was.
I actually liked Reggie Cathy in this movie.
He was fine. I don't know. Just – I don't think any approach that they've taken to the Fantastic Four so far has worked. This needs to be like a 60s set, jet set sci-fi style movie. Like they need to go into space and get their powers from a comet or whatever the origin was, like, you know, cosmic rays.
And the funny thing about this movie is it already has a release date for a sequel, which I'm going to put my money that thing gets canceled and that they shelved Fantastic Four for a while.
This is one of those things that people are kind of rooting for it to fail because it was so bad, so Marvel can have the rights back.
Yeah. Well, I think they also made the movie so the rights didn't lapse.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, it's stuff like this that just.
But this is a franchise killer of a movie, I think. And again, I don't think it was like agonizingly bad. It's a bad movie,
yeah.
But I did not find it an excruciating watch. I found it to be.
It's just so dull and boring to me. It was not like it's not the fun kind of bad. You know,
no,
it's not a Batman and Robin bad.
No, but it's also, and I'll defend it to this point, it is not the kind of bad where I wanted to get up and leave.
Have you seen Batman and Robin, by the way?
Yeah, and not in a long time.
I mean,
but
that's
yeah.
one of my favorite – like I hate the movie as a Batman movie, but I love the movie as just everything you can possibly do wrong in a big budget franchise.
I've wanted movie. To revisit it. But
oh,
I
it's
just
bad.
Haven't.
You should watch it. Get the Riff Tracks track to watch
it.
It's friggin' hilarious.
Is that
so
the...
at this point, do they reboot this again? I mean, what's the point?
No, I think it's done.
Well,
for a while.
Mean, however long it takes the rights to go back to Marvel. And who knows where we'll be superhero movie wise by then. Fox is done with this, I assume.
Yeah, they've had three chances at it and they can't crack it. So,
well, you know what? I don't hate the ones with Jessica Alba. I don't hate those.
Okay,
They're not good, but
they weren't well received either.
Well, I mean, the first one was real well received enough to get a sequel. I think there's some good work in there. Who's the guy that was like the second biggest motion capture guy that was in the Hellboy movies? Oh, what is his name? Doug something. He's not Andy Serkis, but he's close.
I don't know.
Anyway,
I know who you're talking about.
But he was the Silver Surfer in the second movie.
Well, the guy who was
he was Abe Sapien in the Hellboy movies.
Yeah, right. the guy who played
Doug Jones.
Doug Jones, that's it.
The guy who played Dr. Doom was the guy who played
the bad ape
in Planet of the Apes.
Oh yeah.
Toby Kebbell.
And then the Dr. Doom thing, they never get right either, because it's always. Like, he's supposed to be some, like, crazy, like, Eastern European dictator.
I would have watched an hour of him blowing people's heads up.
Yeah. But then the climax, oh, we got to defeat him. And I hate those climax. This climax was obviously reshot and rewritten.
And looked shoddy. Like, the shoddy CGI looked terrible.
But I hate when they build up this villain as all-powerful, like Dr. Doom was. He was basically doing whatever he wanted to. Like, just would think about it and it would happen. And then their solution is just, okay, let's try harder. Like,
yeah.
It's basically like, oh, no, now we got to fire, fireballs at him. And then the thing can push him.
Fireballs at him?
Yeah. Anyway, this is a bad movie, but I don't think it's.
Grades.
Go ahead, Cody.
Grades, gentlemen.
It's a C for me.
That's pretty generous.
Yeah, teetering on C-. I could go either way. Really, I don't care. It's forgettable. Nobody's going to – I mean, I don't think that it belongs in the pantheon of bad movies, but it's not good.
I was teetering at a C-, D+, and I think I just got to go with a D+. I got to stab this thing in the heart. Because it's just, I don't.
You got to blow its head up.
I don't. I got to explode its brains in a hallway. I don't want anybody to think that it's any good, because it's not. This is just a waste of time. Like, it's not
it is.
It's not good, and it's not bad, so bad it's good.
Yeah.
Which is the only other option there. All right, let's go ahead and move on to our next movie, The Gift.
Hey, excuse me. Hi.
Hi.
I'm sorry to bother you. I think I know you.
Yeah? I'm sorry. I can't place you.
Is your name Simon? Simon Cowell?
Yeah, Simon. Hi.
Oh, it is you. Oh, we went to school together.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Which one? Fairmont
Park? Fairmont Park.
Really?
Yeah.
Same grade?
What year did you graduate?
Hey, honey. Excuse me, 1 second.
Oh, yeah. Okay, sure.
We'll rush. This is my wife, Robin. This is, I didn't get your name, sorry.
Gordon Mosley.
Gordo. Hi. Oh. Gordon. Robin.
Gordo?
Hi.
Wow, buddy. I did not recognize you. Gordon Mosley. Oh, my gosh, honey.
Yeah?
Gordo and I went to school together like, I don't know what.
Really?
80 years ago.
Oh,
almost.
A young married couple's lives are thrown into a harrowing tailspin when an acquaintance from the husband's past brings mysterious gifts and a horrifying secret to light after more than 20 years. We all saw this, right? You saw this,
we
Kiko.
Sure did.
Kiko.
We sure did.
Kiko, tell us about The Gift.
Oh, well, you know what? I enjoyed The Gift. I thought it was a good film. No, actually, Joel Edgerton, he's a director, writer of this movie. It's his first movie. He's known more for his acting, of course. I don't know if you know who he is, but he
was the white dude that played the Egyptian dude in Exodus, Gods and Kings.
Well, more than that, he was the guy that was fighting what's his name?
Osama bin Laden.
Tom Hardy in Warrior. If you saw Warrior.
Oh, yeah.
He was also, right, too.
He's also in Zero Dark Thirty, yeah.
He was also in Zero Dark 30. He'll be in Johnny Depp's new movie Black Mass coming later this year, so... Yeah. That's interesting. Well, this is his first of the outing as a director. He's written a couple of things before, but I thought for his first go at it, I mean, it wasn't bad. I thought the setup was pretty nice and you know, kind of like a slow burn. I didn't like the marketing of this film and the fact that I think it was Richard Roper called it the modern day version of Fatal Attraction, which I don't agree with at all, because I think Fatal Attraction has a really story. That hinges on the idea of sex as power and things like that. And this has nothing in that way whatsoever. So I don't know how they mix those two up just because there's some crazy person, you know, kind of stalking.
It just sounds cool,
I guess. Yeah. I mean, it's an easy sell, right?
Yeah.
This reminded me when I first saw it. It's not nearly as good, but there's a French film that came out back in 2000 called With a Friend Like Harry. And it's about kind of the same thing. A man from up the past kind of infiltrates this fellow classmate from his past life and his wife's life, and kind of gets weird and creepy. In the same way that Joel Edgerton's character Gordo does with this movie. I think that, you know, again, for his first movie, I really liked the way the setup happened. You know, it was kind of like a building up to, you know, the big gift, which was never, I thought, really predictable, in my opinion. I knew that it was going to get to this thing, whatever it was. You saw it in the trailers. You knew it was going to, you know, building up to this last gift or what you want to call it, whatever you want to call it. It starts off with small gifts and then it kind of like keeps on going until it reaches this one last final gift that you see in the trailers. But I think that, he kind of builds it up pretty well. I thought he was good as this creepy guy that, you know, you're not sure where his intentions are at first.
Yeah.
I kind of liked what's his name? His name is slipping my mind
Jason
now.
Bateman.
Jason Bateman as this guy, because you know, you see Jason Bateman as this one kind of character,
always kind one of kind put of actor, upon, flustered,
right?
Voice of reason, straight man,
right? And it was a lot different. This was a lot different character for him, and I think he did a good job with it. Rebecca Hall also does a good job. Everybody, it's mostly just them three that are in the film. Watching this guy kind of, you know. pick at them and get under their skin. So, not bad overall. I would recommend it.
You have a different opinion, Cody.
I do. I was not into the gift at all, and I truly mean that at all until the end. But so I guess not at all. But you know, my thing was. I think that there's a lot of setup, and Kiko was saying that it's a slow burn, but I actually think it's a boring burn. I found the first hour of this movie really, really boring, and I thought it was just way too slow. And, you know, I think the biggest issue comes with the turns that happen in the movie, because there's some character turns that happen, and I don't think that they're established well enough for the turns to have the impact I think that they want them to, especially with Joel Edgerton's character, who I don't think that he is creepy enough or weird enough in this movie to warrant the kind of treatment that he gets.
And he was wearing an earring. How much more creepy do you want him to be?
Yeah. but I don't think that he ever hits a point where I'm like, oh, this guy's really weird, or oh, this guy's really creepy. He was a little socially awkward, but and it's really hard to buy into this thing as, you know, a somewhat horror type thing, although I would call it more of a thriller than a horror, but to be really creeped out by him or made uneasy for him, I don't think that they established that very well. And I was never at the point where I'm like, okay, this guy's really weird or creepy, or I feel uneasy about what he's going to do.
When he shows up like at the house like two or three times with, and he knows that he's working.
But that seemed innocuous though. It didn't seem over the top.
I disagree on that. I mean, it's
yeah.
Just,
I
it's
think.
Just
I mean, a... I don't think it had to be over the top for him to come off as creepy. I mean, I think he did enough to warrant that creepiness from at least Jason Bateman.
But it's so weird that you're calling creepiness a guy coming over and doing nice things for you. Like,
well,
that doesn't.
But I mean, I guess we're approaching it from different points of view, though. I mean, if you're in a marriage or a relationship, and like you're at work and some dude is coming over
right
repeatedly to just show up at your house and talk to your wife.
Yeah.
That's a line that's crossed. Like, I mean, that's not – nobody's really going to sit right with that, especially this guy that you don't really even know.
It is, but I think that there's a difference between that and like menacing horror. I'm
well,
scared of this
but
person.
But I mean, I think that's where I think the movie is a little more realistic in the fact that it wasn't – you know, he wasn't showing up with like dead babies or something.
That's
like
right,
that.
But why go into the jump scare thing that they do several times? It just doesn't.
Like, well, that was after a character turn.
Right.
That was after they realized that he was like being incredibly deceptive. So I see that as a build. The thing though that bugs me most about this movie is the ending. I think the ending is too far out there.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of what I'm saying is that. I think that in order for the character turns, and really Bateman has a turn too, and I don't think that they built him up as a good guy enough to pull the rug out. And again, and also something I really didn't like was Rebecca Hall's sort of red herring that she has of I don't want to go into too much detail without going into spoilers, but you know, there are times where
– I'm not sure what you mean.
Her sanity is questioned, I think, a little bit. And I think that they go down that road without much payoff.
Yeah, I liked how the movie switched the perspective to her point of view. You know, maybe she realized that maybe her husband's not the guy that he seems to be.
Yeah.
But then I think the ending, and I wrote this in my review, totally pulls that back from her. Totally rips the movie out of her hands and turns it into kind of just another creepo thriller.
Yeah.
When I think that the movie had been before that, a little more about, you know, how we have relationships with people, like how, you know, bullies affect people that are bullied, and
yeah,
how that may manifest itself to certain people as looking menacing when it's just looking for closure or looking for social acceptance or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the movie at the end, the very end, it turns it into just a goofy thriller.
Yeah, I think. What I liked, and I'm not sure if you agree with me or not, either of you, but I didn't find it. I didn't know what was going to happen next.
There was one twist that I knew was going to happen.
I didn't know. I thought something else was going to happen that didn't happen.
And the last gift, the first CD, I think it was. I knew what was going to happen.
I don't know. I just I thought the end was a little too hokey.
The end is actually what I like the most.
Really?
Well, no, yeah. I think the end – now, I'll agree with Cody on this. He's not creepy enough for the end.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I agree with that. I totally agree
I think
with that.
That if you wanted – okay, so – because I like the end. I thought the end was good. But he didn't get creepy enough for that to be the payoff. You know what I mean?
I agree with that.
Because that's a pretty fucked up ending.
Right. Yeah.
And so I'm not sure if he was the kind of person that would do that. Because I don't know if he was crazy enough to do that, because you know what's going to happen after if it, because I mean, it's the movie's left without you knowing really what happens. But if it turns out to be what most of us think it is, and I don't want to give too much away, then that guy's going to jail forever. Right.
And yeah.
So I don't know if he was at that point anywhere in the movie where you thought, man, this guy is really fucked in the head to do something like that.
And see, I didn't even find him that messed up to the point where you saw that he was unstable in any way. And for me, if you're going to make a turn like that, you better well establish the fact that he is off kilter.
See, I agree with that too. Like, I think that like I'm saying, the ending is too, it gets too like crazy thriller for what this movie was before that point.
Right. Like, if he's a manipulative dude, cool. That's yeah. I can see that, but that's a huge jump.
And it's kind of a real gross, like,
I mean,
like socially, like, ugh, ending.
And I like that. And actually, that sort of follows suit of the Australian movies we've seen. If you've seen some of the other movies that this guy has written.
So. Yeah, like The Rover.
Like
yeah.
The Rover and The Square, which he wrote both of. You know, you're used to seeing those kind of – and even Animal Kingdom, I think, has an ending like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he wrote all three of those, right?
I know he wrote The Rover and Square. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he wrote Animal Kingdom. I'll check right now.
Okay. He's in Animal Kingdom.
Right.
But I appreciate the darkness of the ending, even though I may not fully agree with how they got there or whether it was earned or not. And I think the problem is a lot of it is unearned. I had a lot of problems with the pacing of the movie. I mean, not as much as Kiko does. I like a good slow burn, but this thing was just flat out boring to me.
He didn't write Animal Kingdom. He wrote The Rover and he wrote The Square. I love The Square. I don't know if you've all seen The Square, but
yeah,
his brother directed that actually. So,
speaking of his brother, Nash Edgerton is his name.
Yeah.
He has a cameo in this movie, small part. And it threw me the fuck off each time because
it looks like his brother.
They look almost exactly the same.
Yeah,
and I thought something. I thought the movie was setting up something weird.
Yeah,
like something out of the ordinary. Because there's the weird thing about Jason Bateman's bosses are twins.
Yeah,
and I thought that this was supposed to be some. I was like, what's happening? Why does this guy look exactly like Gordo?
Yeah. By the way, if I should have any time I have to promote this, I will. His brother Nash. Has an amazing short,
Bridge?
Yeah, Nash Bridges. he has an amazing short film called Spider, my favorite short film of all time. You have to watch it. Stop what you're doing. Pause this podcast. Go watch Spider. It's on YouTube. It's incredible.
It's awesome. I love that movie.
All right.
It's only about 10 minutes, 10, 12 minutes, right?
I think it's even shorter than that. I think it's like 7 or 8 minutes long.
Okay.
All right, so grades. Go ahead.
Anyway, well, before we get to grades, go to cinesnob.net and you can see my interview with Joel Edgerton. I interviewed him a couple of weeks ago for The Gift. So we talk about, directors he's worked it with and what he's taken from them and also what makes a great thriller. And he has some interesting take on that. So check it out.
All right, grades.
I'm giving this a solid B.
I'm with you, a B. I liked it.
I'm at a C plus, teetering on a C, but probably given Fantastic Four was a C plus. I don't think it's poorly made or anything, but it's just not for me.
You didn't like this gift that it brought you.
I thought that it was a lump of coal.
You would have liked it if it was a dick in a box.
Yeah.
I loved that song in The Lonely Island. So yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. If you're looking for gifts for Cody, it's on his Amazon wish list. All right. We're going to move on to something we missed last week with Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
Package is still on that plane.
Shut down the fuel pump.
Mechanicals are locked out.
What about the electrical system?
Oh, that might work.
No. Hydraulics.
Okay, stand by.
No, they're encrypted.
Benji, the plane.
Yes, the package is on the plane. We get it.
Can you open the door?
I'm by the plane. Benji, can you open the door?
Maybe.
Open the door when I tell you!
Ethan and team take on their most impossible mission yet, eradicating the Syndicate, an international rogue organization, as highly skilled as they are, committed to destroying the IMF. Now, Cody didn't see this, but you and I did, Kiko. So tell us about Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
You know what? I'm really at a crossroads when it comes to these movies now that we're at our fifth one, right? The fifth one?
Yeah, this is the fifth
one. I'm not sure what people want from these anymore. I didn't like Ghost Protocol at all. And people love that movie.
You didn't like it at all?
No, I didn't find it entertaining whatsoever. But I loved Part 3. And
yeah, I love Part 3 too.
And the first two are all right. I think that this one falls around like the same type of film as 1 and 2. Kind of gets back to kind of more of a simpler story. I think that it's kind of almost generic at times with the, what were they called? You just mentioned
the
their
Syndicate.
Name. The Syndicate, yeah. Like when that name comes up, I'm just like, oh, come on. You couldn't have thought of anything else. It's called the Syndicate. How many other bad guy organizations are known as the Syndicate? Anyway, but you know, it all comes back down to Tom Cruise and what he can deliver in these kind of movies. I mean, he's a bona fide action star, and he's always going to be. No matter what you think about him and his real life, I love me some Tom Cruise, and I think that he does a great job here as Ethan Hunt. I think that this film also proves that Jeremy Renner needs to go away.
He doesn't do anything. It's weird because the rumors were that he was brought on in Ghost Protocol to one day take over the franchise.
Exactly, to take over the franchise.
Because that was when Tom Cruise was really troubled. That when there was, all of his movies were bombing, and they still are outside of Mission Impossible.
Right. So I'm not sure if you agree with me, but I think that he's just kind of there because they can't get rid of him. I mean, they already added him.
It's weird that he still sticks around because most of this cast, well, I shouldn't say most of it, but a lot of them outside of Simon Pegg, who's been in since Part 3, they kind of rotate in and out. Ving Rhames is always there because I guess Ving Rhames is doing nothing else.
He has some shit on Tom Cruise. That's what it is.
I don't know.
Ving Rhames got to eat.
They must just be pals because he's been around since the first one. But right. the other people have changed all the time. Like there's always a different woman. There's always a different other dude. And then Jeremy – Jonathan Rhys Meyers. I almost said John Rhys Davies, but that was not true. That would have been way cooler.
Ethan.
That was a terrible impression.
I'm tired of the whole, witty computer hacker Simon Pegg. I mean, it's all right. I mean, but it's kind of old hat already.
I've resigned myself to what these movies are. Story wise, they're nothing really good. It's just kind of a thrill the whole time, and I was fine with this one. I was fine with Rogue Nation. I mean, I'm sorry, Ghost Protocol, and I really, really the last one I really liked was Mission Impossible 3.
Because I still find that one to be my favorite one, and I'm not sure if it's because of Philip Seymour Hoffman as the bad guy or what it was, but I thought that one was from. Front to back, the most entertaining. It just starts off great. I love those films that just start off like at a 10.
Well, the clip we played to start for this movie is the beginning of the movie, the one that's so famously shown everywhere where Tom Cruise is literally hanging off the side of a plane in real life. Does that do anything for you at all? Do you care?
It didn't do anything for me. I think I enjoy more of an emotional impact. That's why I like Part 3 so much because it starts off with somebody, their brain is attached to a bomb or whatever it is. I don't know.
It was Carrie Russell.
They had implanted something that was going to kill her. And just Tom Cruise's face and the way that he's reacting to that. This is more, you know, based on, you know, stunts and things like that. And it's fine. I think it's cool. I read that he did that stunt himself, which I think is awesome.
Does that matter?
So, yeah, anything Tom.
I mean,
that he did it himself?
Yeah, because, I mean, that's always a huge deal, but does it even really matter? Do you think?
I mean, to a point, I guess it does a little bit. I mean, people are, you know, bitching that women are getting CGI nudity now. People, you know what I mean? It's like people wanted 100% of an actor to be, you know, on screen no matter what it is. So, I mean, I think people kind of care, I think, that whether Tom Cruise.
It's weird, though, because it only seems to matter outside of the film itself. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't, like, nobody's looking at the movie and complaining about the actual CGI that most people aren't noticing anyway. But they only seem they only seem to care that it's actually Tom Cruise on the plane because they know from behind the scenes stuff that he's actually on the plane. You know, does that make sense?
I mean, it doesn't bother me personally. I mean, whether it's him or not, just as long as the scene plays out, plays out well and plays out with some kind of entertainment value. So
I thought that one just sort of ended.
Yeah,
it ended in the credits. It was like, oh, credits time.
Yeah. So, I thought it was a pretty okay film. I would put it up there with one and two, one probably the first one more than anything, because I really didn't like four or two. So, and three was the best one. So, I mean, if we're comparing here,
I think if they can keep turning them out that are entertaining like this one is, I think it sort of falls apart at the end because. I just got really confused, and maybe I'm the only one.
No, you weren't the only one. It is a little confusing. Again, I said that it was kind of a simple story, but I think more like along the lines of like dialogue and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The script itself and what happens is takes a while to.
There's a lot of double crosses that I wasn't really quite clear on who was crossing who at what time. You know.
True.
But I overall enjoyed it quite a bit. I'm kind of done with thinking these are going to be phenomenal films. Like I said, I still don't understand the massive love that Ghost Protocol gets over Mission Impossible 3. But it doesn't really matter to me one way or the other. It was still a fun movie, I thought. But
yeah, I agree.
All right, what's your grade for this?
I'm giving this a B-.
B-. I'm going to go with a B. I think it was good and enjoyable. Do you think Tom Cruise is ever going to stop doing these? He's 53 now, I believe.
I mean, look at Sylvester Stallone. How long is he going to go? So
until he just turns into leather.
We're going to see. We're going to see Tom Cruise riding on a motorcycle, and he's just going to turn into a wallet or something.
I like that Tom Cruise was on The Daily Show not this past week, but the week before, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And him and John Stewart are the same age, and they could not look more different. Like, John Stewart just looks like a bridge troll. Let's go ahead and move on to our last movie, Vacation.
The four of us are going to take a little trip.
Paris.
No, much better. We're driving to Wally World.
What?
This family's in a rut. We got to shake things up, right? Spend a little quality time. And, of course, it wouldn't hurt for the boys to learn to get along a little better.
By locking them in a car together?
Yeah.
I'm going to miss the first week of wrestling practice.
We'll find a wrestling range along the way.
That's not even a thing.
Guys, come on. My trip to Wally World when I was a kid was the best time I ever had.
So you just want to redo your vacation from 30 years ago? I mean, don't you think that's going to be kind of a letdown?
No. We're not redoing anything. This will be completely different. For one thing, the original vacation had a boy and a girl. This one has two boys. And I'm sure that there will be lots of other differences.
I've never even heard of the original vacation.
Doesn't matter. The new vacation will stand on its own. Okay?
Rusty Griswold takes his own family on a road trip to Wally World in order to spice things up with his wife and reconnect with his sons. Now, it was just you and I that saw this, Cody.
Correct.
So, what'd you think of Vacation?
Well, I will, in the spirit of full disclosure, I have not seen any of the original Vacation movies.
Wait, you haven't even seen Christmas Vacation?
I have not. That's correct.
Holy shit. Have you gotten through this point in life without seeing at least Christmas Vacation?
What year did that come out?
Well, I believe it was 1989, but it's been a pretty heavy holiday staple for the last 10 years at least.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely not seen it.
Wow.
Anyway, so going into this film, having not seen anything, you know, it's a film that's getting absolutely torched online.
Yeah, that makes me sad.
The reviews are not very good. You know, for me, it was a bit of a mixed bag. There's a lot that I really liked about it, and I think in particular Ed Helms is actually pretty great in this. Mm-hmm. It's the best role I've seen him in since Cedar Rapids, which I think was kind of peak Ed Helms for me. You know, I didn't really care for him in the Hangover movies, and I didn't like what they did to him, you know, in The Office eventually. I know you stuck around a lot longer than I did, but.
Well, I watched to the end, and I did not like how they kept resetting his character into something else. The early Andy is the best Andy, where he's like an angry, you know, has anger problems and then turns into kind of a cheeseball a cappella singer.
Right.
But then
yeah.
they tried to turn him into Steve Carell later on, just another version of Steve Carell. But yeah, that kind of early, like season two through like season five Andy is kind of the perfect Ed Helms for me, or season three, I'm sorry.
And he does a lot of things really well. Like he plays exasperated really well, and you know, kind of like the straight man in a really bad situation, which is kind of what he did in Cedar Rapids and what he does to this. I think there's a lot of good jokes and funny moments in this. The raunch is played up pretty heavily. And one thing that I did like that they did was, I like how they kind of just kind of float in comedic actors in and out without making a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a ton of cameos in this thing, and they're not really played as cameos. They're just played as kind of side characters who just pop up and pop out, and it's quick and easy. And some of them work really well. Some of them don't. I think the best one is the one at the Four Corners.
Yeah, that was my favorite. It's Tim Heidecker, Nick Kroll, Caitlin Olson, and then Michael Pena.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a great scene.
And Charlie Day is pretty good, too, in his part.
Yeah.
The thing that I didn't like was I think the whole thing felt a little rote. You know, it was kind of formulaic in that, okay, and I assume that the original Vacation movies are like this, but, you know, you have the thing where they go to a new place and then something terrible happens, and then they go to another place and then something terrible happens, and then they go to another place and something terrible happens, and it's just the same thing over and over again. And it's super repetitive, and at some point it stops becoming amusing, to me at least, and, you know, I think that the best elements of it are Ed Helms kind of losing his mind a little bit. Because some of the stuff, like the sorority thing, I didn't like at all. I didn't like any of the Chris Hemsworth stuff.
You didn't like any of that stuff?
No,
you
didn't
even
really.
Like his recurring faucet metaphors?
The faucet thing was funny. But, you know, I think the, like a lot of these movies, the raunch is not what's funny, but the dialogue, I think, is what it makes this thing funny. And it's hit or miss. Mm-hmm. And when it hits, it's pretty funny. It's really funny. But when it misses, it's kind of bland. So I have mixed feelings overall.
Well, I'm on the opposite end of you, well, regarding at least having seen the Vacation movies, because I've seen them all a lot. I wrote this in my review, but like the first Vacation movie that was released in 1983, National Lampoon's Vacation is its full title. That's probably one of the first movies I can remember actually seeing. And I was way too young for it. But my dad never cared about that stuff. But that was a big movie in our family. Like we all watched that movie and we all love that movie. And the second movie, European Vacation, is a pretty big departure from the first one, at least stylistically. Because this is, you know, this new Vacation movie is very similar to the first one in the road trip aspect. None of the movies after that really followed that suit. You know, it was all, you know, different vacations, whatever. Obviously different vacations, but, you know, they weren't all road trips. It was only the first movie that was a road trip. But the second one was my dad took me and my sister and some other kid, I can't remember who, someone my mom babysat to see this movie in the theater, and it was still way too young for seeing European Vacation at a theater. I was like 6 years old. And then the third one, of course, Christmas Vacation, we all saw in the theater. And then I don't remember when. It has to be in the last 10 or 15 years or so. It became a bona fide modern Christmas classic. Between that movie and A Christmas Story, those are the two like modern holiday movies that people watch. And I guess everybody except for you.
Yeah.
Have you seen A Christmas Story?
Yeah, I saw it at school once.
Just you saw it at school once?
Yeah.
What do you watch during Christmas? Like, does none of your family like ever just throw that movie on like at a party?
Well, not really. I mean, if I had to have a go-to movie, it's probably Elf. I'm of that kind of generation where Elf is the go-to Christmas movie.
Elf's a great movie, but I don't think it appeals to the older people as much.
I don't know about that.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think my mom would be as into Elf as she is into Christmas Vacation, personally.
That's interesting because I know that my dad loves Elf.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Mm.
I think Elf is a great thing.
I really like Elf, but I think maybe Christmas Vacation to me seems a little more cross generational.
Probably.
Anyway, but that's, I think Christmas Vacation is probably the high watermark of the series. Just that it's way more accessible than anything else. Like the first movie's great, but it's a little mean-spirited. And then the fourth movie, Vegas Vacation, I liked okay. Everybody else hates it, but I liked it all right. It's kind of the, like, to me, and I wrote this in my review also. I talked to the director a couple years ago who also directed a documentary called Paul Williams Still Alive.
Yeah.
Steven Kessler's his name. And I told him, I actually kind of liked the movie. Because in Paul Williams Still Alive, he talks about how everybody hated Vegas Vacation.
Yeah.
And I told him, I actually kind of like it because it's the only movie about Vegas from that time that shows the weird family-friendly version that Vegas had become.
Right.
Briefly. And go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think that, and I don't know if this will make sense to you, but I almost think that a good microcosm of the movie itself is the car that they're driving. Because I think that there's so many great jokes from that car and so many bad jokes from it. That it's sort of like for example, the plug thing, I didn't find that funny, and in the Korean GPS, I didn't find funny, but like there's a moment where Ed Helms presses a button on the key fob, I think, or in the dash, and his seat just does a 360 degree turn for no reason.
Yeah, it was the rocket button.
Yeah,
or whatever. They were trying to get away from the trucker,
and that was really chasing. Funny.
Yeah. Well, you haven't seen the first film, but the first film, a big deal is the car, like just the terrible car that they have. And the movie opens with them picking up this car. It's Chevy Chase and Anthony Michael Hall, and they go to trade in. They have an old like 70s station wagon, and they're going to pick up their new car, and they're trading in the old car. And Eugene Levy is the car dealer, and they wheel out that monstrosity, the family truckster, it's called, the green station wagon with the wood paneling. And meanwhile, like a guy takes away their old car and instantly they crush it, like in a big car crusher.
Mm-hmm.
So they're stuck with this horrible family truckster. So that's where this movie was kind of, I guess, aping the original too much, because this isn't a remake. This is a sequel. It's not a soft reboot, we'd call it in the vernacular.
Yeah, I would call it a soft reboot.
And it's got some, it has nods to the original films. The funniest I thought, and I don't think anybody else laughed at this joke but me, is Ed Helms going through an album at the beginning of the film, looking at photos from his old family vacations, and it's distinctly the actors that played the part of Rusty in the original films.
Mm-hmm.
So you get Anthony Michael Hall, who's supposed to be Ed Helms, and you get Johnny Galecki, Ethan Embry, and whoever the dude is that played Rusty in European Vacation. Never went on to really do anything else. I thought that was funny. There's some meta humor like that that works, and there's others that doesn't work, like the clip we just played.
Yeah.
You know, it was a little too on the nose. But I get the sense that this movie is kind of unappreciated. Or it's going to be anyway. Like, everybody's it's getting trashed online.
I think that – I don't know that I would go that far, but I would definitely agree that it is getting hammered more than it probably should.
Yeah. Because I was laughing pretty steadily through it all. There is stuff that doesn't work. I liked the sorority thing. I thought it probably went on a little too long.
Yeah.
It didn't quite cross the line from, all right, this is long enough to, all right, this is too long, but you made it really fucking funny because you took it too long.
Yeah. So it's sort of like that old comedy theory of you keep it going until it's not funny anymore, and then you keep it going until it's funny again.
Well, my closest example I can think of is Family Guy's Conway Twitty jokes.
Yeah.
Are you aware of those? And then one time they just played a whole song.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is not funny. Wait a minute. This is fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
And I think the sorority thing could have been like that, watching Christine Applegate just get the shit beat out of her.
What did you think about the kids? Because I thought that they were the weak link of the movie.
I liked them. I liked the foul-mouthed little brother, I think, better than the sensitive, nerdy older brother.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I just like and this is partially personal preference, but a lot of the potty I'm going to sound like an old fucking
duddy.
Here
but we go.
A lot of the I don't like the potty humor.
Why did they have to make it so dirty with them talking about poops?
Well, no, but like rubbing shit on themselves at a toxic waste dump, like it's just not funny to me.
Yeah, and that's a joke that got like heavy play in the trailer.
Yeah.
And the all the commercial spots for it. So by the time they get there, you're like, I've seen this. I already know what's going to happen.
Right.
I wrote this in my review too. Like it seems it's updated for like what's modern. What modern comedy considers raunchy, because the original film, you know, there was boobs and sex talk and just kind of disturbing sex stuff. But this is more potty humor and
It's definitely gross out humor. I mean,
yeah, potty humor. Look, you got me saying it now too.
That's just if humor's in the toilet.
Going back to Ed Helms, I liked Ed Helms in this. He doesn't quite have the lunacy like bubbling under the surface that Chevy Chase had in the original films.
Yeah.
But
he does. And this is probably one of the funnier moments for me was him trying to kick the tumbleweeds.
Yeah, that was a great gag.
It was a really good joke. Especially the second one where there's a fire hydrant in the middle of nowhere.
What I think something was really weak and unexplored was like Ron Livingston's, I guess, basically just a cameo.
Yeah.
As like a hotshot airline pilot.
Yeah.
There's some stuff that it feels like maybe it got like maybe cut out. Maybe there's a longer cut of this movie that
sort of feel like it was this whole movie is just a little piecemeal. Like it was just like I could have seen a different person contributing a new way of things going wrong and just adding it together, because that's what I mean when I say it's repetitive. It's just sort of like a Mad Lib where it's like this goes wrong and then this goes wrong.
Yeah. I hesitate to say that as a weakness, because it is kind of the formula of the original movie. I don't know. I really reading the reactions, because I saw this last week before. You know, normally we see it the week of release, and I saw this last week before reviews started trickling in. I guess before the embargo. Normally we see it, and there's already some reviews online. But I was really shocked to see how many people just flat out hated this movie.
Yeah,
because I think it's funny all the way through. It's no masterpiece of comedy or anything. I think there's some really sharp stuff in it. And it is, you know, it is riding the legacy of something that people used to love, you know, especially Christmas Vacation. I don't think people have as much fondness for the original film as they do for, you know, what it spawned. But I can't help but feel like this thing is going to get. You know, somebody's going to look back on it and be like, you know what, this is actually pretty funny. when it shows up on Netflix or something.
Yeah, I'm going to be interested to see what kind of life it had. It's funny in parts. I can't give it a full recommendation, but it's not nearly as bad as people are saying it is. And I think that. And by the way, how awful does Chevy Chase look these days? He doesn't even look like himself anymore.
Man, I like to be. It's easy to be snarky on some guy who's been kind of notoriously an asshole for so long. But he's an old man. Like he was old when he was in his 40s.
Yeah,
in
he's
the 80s,
70 now, you know? I think.
Yeah, so I mean, the one that kind of made me sad was Beverly D'Angelo, who about 5 years ago went the plastic surgery route and just froze her face in that mask. Because when she was on Entourage, when I was actually watching Entourage, she still looked really good, pretty good.
Yeah. So you know, it's very typical, and it's interesting to see. I guess this is going to be the last movie that. John Francis Daley and Jonathan Goldstein do before they do Spider-Man. You know, their track record is a little sketchy, so we'll see what happens. I think this was the first movie they've actually directed themselves.
Yeah, this is their directorial debut.
Yeah, and I mean, they did a good job of being able to round up cameos because, like I said, there are a ton in this movie.
John Francis Daley's been kicking around forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I guess his biggest role people would know him from was from Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah.
And Bones. He was on Bones forever.
Oh, yeah. And there's just a lot of weird, Colin Hanks is in the movie for like 45 seconds.
Yeah. And someone else, I can't remember. There was one that was like fleeting that I forgot. Well, you see John Francis Daley for like 3 seconds at the end.
Yeah, in Keegan-Michael Key.
Oh yeah, that's right. I feel like his part was probably bigger too, at least intended to be bigger.
Yeah, that's another joke that didn't work for me, that particular thing. But
I don't know how I felt about the recharacterization of the Rusty character as a bumbling doofus, I guess, because It's kind of weird to look at the other movies because they were all totally different parts, but it was always kind of a, you know, he was smarter than his dad situation. You know, he would never go down that path. But I guess they had to, you know, who would they have cast?
Right.
If you know, they couldn't have Ed Helms play that guy. I don't know. I feel I really like this movie more than I thought I was going to, and I feel bad that nobody else seems to like it because I think. Yeah, it makes me sad because I think it's not deserving. It doesn't deserve the hate it gets. It kind of reminds me of because I was skipping through the channels earlier. Did you ever see The Rocker?
Yeah.
With what is his name? Rainn Wilson.
Yeah.
People hate that fucking movie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I like plenty of comedies that get a lot of hate. Like, I mean, I remember Kiko and I, when we saw 30 Minutes or Less, we were laughing our asses off at it. And oddly enough, and this one probably doesn't hold up as well, but Your Highness like destroyed me the first time I saw it.
I really like Your Highness, and nobody else does.
Oh man, I thought it was hilarious the first time.
Well,
I mean,
nobody else outside of the three of us or the two of us.
Yeah, but I don't. Maybe it will go down as one of those guilty pleasure comedies. I mean, you never know. There's, you know, people hate those Adam Sandler movies too, but they eventually turned around and. And, you know, Tommy Boy was trashed. And, I mean, I don't think that this is quite the cultural touchstone that those are going to be. But who knows? I don't know.
Did you see The Rocker?
Yeah, I saw The Rocker.
Did you like The Rocker?
You know what I loved about it? And I didn't like it at all. But every single second that Jason Sudeikis is in that movie is just pure gold.
I can't remember. Was he in the original band?
No, Jason Sudeikis was like the manager. So, like...
He
kept on hitting on, I guess it was Christina Applegate in the movie, right?
Yeah.
One of the moms.
Like, yeah, it was that guy that was a singer who had a brief acting career, too.
Yeah. So there's two lines that Jason Sudeikis has that are amazing. One of them is he says to Christina Applegate, he says something like, "I'd love to crawl inside you and live there for 9 months." And then the best line of the movie is after this band records a song, Jason Sudeikis goes, John Lennon is rolling over in his grave to hide the huge boner you just gave him. That line kills me.
Teddy Geiger was the singer guy. He was also on a brief show with what is the guy's name that was on Ed? Do you remember the show Ed?
Tom Cavanaugh?
Tom Cavanaugh, yes. There's such a great cast in this movie. I'm looking it up right now. With Emma Stone before she hit big. I loved the old band. His old band, it was Vesuvius. Do you remember? And it was Will Arnett, Fred Armisen, and Bradley Cooper.
Oh yeah, I forgot Bradley Cooper was the other one.
And there's a scene near the beginning where they ditch him, like when they break up, you know, kick him out of the band or whatever.
Yeah.
And he like runs and catches up with the van like a Terminator.
Yeah.
There's some weird, absurd stuff in that. Who's behind this movie? Who made this movie?
I think Ken Kwapis?
No. Peter Cataneo? Cataneo? I don't even know who this is.
Cataneo.
He directed the Full Monty back in 1997. And that's pretty much it. Done some TV stuff.
Oh, you know what's a weird connection is that one of the writers of this movie was Maya Forbes, who wrote and directed Infinitely Polar Bear,
which we're
doing later. This way to connect it.
Oh, look at that. A deep cut connecting it. Only because I scrolled past Comedy Central earlier today and The Rocker was on. Is that? I think I actually like Josh Gad in that movie, too, now that I think about it.
Ooh.
Oh.
Ooh.
Yeah, Josh Gad. Emma Stone, Bradley Cooper, Fred Armisen.
Look at Josh Gad's IMDb and see if I've ever liked him in anything.
You didn't like Frozen?
No.
Or him in Frozen?
Not really.
Did you? Let's see. Let's look at Josh Gad right now.
Was he tolerable in 21, even though that movie was bad?
I never saw 21. That's the card counting movie, right?
Yeah.
I never saw it. Oh, I forgot wasn't he a Daily Show correspondent for a little while?
I think for very briefly.
Oh.
Anyway, let's just move right on.
Let's look at Josh Gad's IMDb. Oh, he was on Party Down. I forgot about that. Anyway, what's your grade for Vacation?
I'm giving it a C+. I can't recommend it, but it's it's good for at least a few laughs for sure. I mean, several laughs, multiple laughs.
I'm gonna go with a B. I really liked it. I'm sad that no one else seemed to, because I like to think that my finger's on the pulse of what audiences like today. But
all right, that's going to do it for this week. What's next week? I don't even know.
Next week is Straight Outta Compton.
Oh yeah.
Have you seen there's I guess some sort of tool online where you can make a meme. Oh yeah. God.
What? I love that app. I've used it all week.
Where are you straight out of?
I put straight out of the Guadalupe for my work. Nah, and then I grew up on the south side of town in a small neighborhood called Via Coronado.
Ooh.
So I made one called Straight Out of Via Coronado because got to represent.
I'm straight out of Leon Valley.
I want somebody to do a straight out of Alamo Heights. That'd be
I
want
to do a North Central San Antonio.
Straight out of Churchill High School.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. So Straight Out of Compton. Anything else?
It looks like we also have Cop Car opening.
Oh yeah, finally. It's kind of trickling out here and there.
Yeah. So we'll be able to talk about that, and then we have one that they're not screening for us.
Which is that Ooh. One?
The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Oh, that's not screening.
What?
No. Son of a bitch! I've loved the trailers personally.
Oh really?
Yeah, I thought it was great. That kind of vibe is what I wanted from a Fantastic Four movie, like the 60s. Like I wanted a Fantastic Four movie to be like a cross between Mad Men and Austin Powers, so not like totally serious, but have some funniness to it. And
wow. Well, so you know what?
What?
They're not screening it, so not a good time.
Are they not screening it here or not screening it at all? Any ideas?
Well, they're not screening it here for sure. I don't know if it's.
I gotta check my Austin email, see if that's the case. I don't know, a late summer movie that they're not screening, it's not a good sign at all. It's not just a fuck you San Antonio sign, it's more of a...
Well, and especially when it's from a... Well, actually, let me see what studio it is, because sometimes San Antonio has problems with Warner Brothers not screening here, and if it's Warner Brothers, that could be why.
It's Guy Ritchie and what's his name? Henry Cavill, Armie Hammer.
Yeah.
And then what's the woman's name?
San Antonio Armie Hammer?
Oh, it's Warner Brothers.
It is Warner Brothers, so it could very well be a San Antonio thing, but I don't know.
Is it Alicia Vikander?
Yes.
Ooh.
Ooh, I'm a big fan of her.
Yeah.
I like – what was that?
Was that your boner or something? I didn't hear anything. Did you just become tumescent over there?
I think I drank one too many beers, guys.
Yeah, Alicia Vikander, last seen in Ex Machina.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, high fives happening.
Well, it wasn't
here. Hey, remember, we got to balance this out, guys. Oh, yeah.
Armie Hammer.
He makes some good cupcakes.
I haven't been to his cupcake thing.
I haven't either.
I have former coworkers that swear by it, but
I've heard great things about Bird Bakery.
So he's married, right? That's him and his wife, or are they?
Yeah.
Then why was he pretending he was single in Entourage?
The
movie.
Yeah, I know.
What? Come on, Armie.
God, how dare you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish next week was a bigger week. It's just not.
I'm looking forward to Straight Outta Compton. I've heard it's a little tame, though.
Yeah, and it's also like 2.5 hours long, apparently.
Oh, good lord!
Yeah,
it's an epic, man. That's what you call an epic.
I heard that they don't use drugs or racial slurs at
really?
All.
Really?
Maybe it wasn't racial slurs. Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
I wonder if they get into Eazy-E's AIDS.
I don't know. Yeah, he died like 2 days before Selena did.
Really?
Yeah, because I remember a friend of mine. Like complaining that nobody was sad because Eazy-E died when Selena died.
Well, maybe that's a growing up in San Antonio thing where maybe Eazy-E was a big deal around the country, but Selena was
maybe in,
like stopped the presses in
maybe
San
over
Antonio.
In Compton. Eazy-E was a
yeah.
You know, they were setting up shrines.
The Selena thing in San Antonio is no joke.
Yeah,
it is no joke.
Cody, weren't you like 5 when Selena died?
I remember being afraid of Yolanda Saldivar when I was younger. Like, I would watch the news and I guess I was afraid she was going to come into my room or something. But like,
Have you seen that? She had the most
menacing mugshot I've ever seen in my life.
Have you seen that? There's a local t-shirt company that made a shirt with her face on it.
Barbacoa Apparel. I'm wearing their Beamer shirt right now. Loteria card shirt. Have you seen this shirt?
Yes, I have. It's awesome.
Yeah. It's the Randy Beamer.
Does he endorse the shirt?
Yes, I think.
Well, he's indifferent toward it.
Really?
It's not his – I'm told it's not his favorite thing.
Hmm.
I haven't asked him personally, but I'm told he will pose with it in pictures
yeah.
from like people wearing it.
Yeah.
But I'm told that he's not the hugest fan.
That's interesting because I commented my Randy Beamer story from my life on your page, and he responded to it.
Oh, I remember that. What did he say? I don't remember.
He said something like – because I was telling a story about how when I was younger, my dad had a mustache, and I used to call him Randy Beamer Head.
Oh, okay.
And I was probably like 3 or 4 when this happened. And Randy Beamer was like, I'm so sorry for your dad, but that's really cool.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, that was the picture of Randy and I at the
yeah.
Health Expo.
Yeah.
Where I was like, I finally met Randy Beamer.
Yeah.
That's not true.
I can't tell you how funny it was that Randy actually responded to that. I told my dad, and he just laughed hysterically.
Yeah.
Well, the Yolanda Saldivar t-shirt has her face, and it says, Nolanda.
Yeah.
Get it?
Yeah. They also have a Donkey Lady shirt.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
And then like a bean and cheese shirt I considered getting. I don't think I can pull off the color. It's like a light blue.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, if it was a different – if it was like a black shirt with white lettering and said bean and cheese, I'd be all over that shit.
I do love exclusively San Antonio stuff. Like the bean and cheese taco seems to be a very San Antonio thing, as is the bean burger.
I can't get a good bean and cheese taco in Austin. Right?
Really?
It's really bugging me.
Really?
There's Taco Cabana there, and I love Taco Cabana. But it's just not the same.
Yeah,
because it's got to be greasy.
Taco Cabana has really gone downhill.
I don't want to say that.
I don't care. Maybe they'll sponsor the show.
Cody.
I don't care. Taco Cabana, fix your queso, please.
What's weird is how sometimes it's really spicy and sometimes it's really like runny, and sometimes it's really thick.
It used to be amazing, and now it tastes store bought to me, to my taste.
It's like Rico's.
Yeah, it's like Rico's, or like it's just like Velveeta and Rotel.
Dude, I will wreck some shop on some Velveeta and Rotel with sausage in it.
Yeah, that's how you do it if you're going to do
it. My sister makes that every time she has a party.
Yeah.
Like one of her kids' birthdays.
Yeah.
I'm like, please, I'm going to pour this on everything.
But nothing beats like good San Antonio queso. And I think that when like the love isn't put into it and it's taste store-bought like Taco Cabana or even Rotel. I mean, Rotel and Velveeta is good for like nostalgia purposes, but I love me some real queso.
I love Chacho's queso because it has a little tinge of sweetness to it.
I love how both of you just call it queso.
I'm sorry, queso.
Sorry I didn't put the tilde on the accent.
Look, we are 3/4 white here, okay? So,
And I've been eating subpar Austin.
You know what? If you
breakfast
want
tacos,
I don't know how you feel about this, but if you want good queso, where you can probably find it in Austin, is Texadelphia's queso is awesome. We gotta go.
Oh, I gotta wrap this up. The dogs are barking. My dogs are barking. All right. Enough of that queso. We got a lot of stuff coming up next week. We're also working on our next Alamo Drafthouse screening.
Yeah, we haven't confirmed it yet, but we've got a date.
We got our first idea shot down.
Yeah, our first idea did not
work.
Thanks
a lot, Disney.
Yeah, Disney kind of stepped in.
We're going to show High Fidelity, one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
Disney put the kibosh on that.
It's going to be Monday, August 24th, so put that in your calendar, and we should announce it soon.
All right, let's go ahead and wrap this up. On that note, I'm Jared Kingery.
I'm Cody Viafania.
And I'm Kiko Martinez.
Thank you for listening to the Cine Snob podcast. To read reviews, interviews, and more, visit cinesnob.net. See you next week.